Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Main. Welcome to the Weird Things. No wait, this is After Things, after right? Things. We're doing After before Weird because SpaceX launch got moved till tomorrow. But that's okay. Everything's going to be fine. I'm joined by Brian Brushwood.
Heck yeah. Not just me, it's my new appendage. I've got a puppy in my arms. A literal puppy dog.
And puppyless is Justin Robert Young.
Although the puppy love that I have for the two of you is forever growing.
Good enough for me.
So right off the top, we're going to talk about Star Wars, folks, and this is going to be spoiler heavy. I don't even want to dare and say, oh, we'll do a non-spoiler version of it first because things I have seen so many versions of that and people said that and they spoiled it. I don't want to do that to you. We don't want to do that to you. So guys, spoiler, stop listening right now if you have not seen Star Wars Force Awakens. Let me clear the
course. I am going to say this. There's going to be a lot of conversation about Star Wars The Force Awakens, and you're going to get a lot of opinions. I will guarantee you that nobody has thought about this movie more than Andrew Main.
Holy cow. I got the multiple phases of Andrew Main's dealing with this.
If you have not seen the movie, go see it, and you are going to want to listen to it. To tie a ribbon around your finger to listen to this, because I can say with confidence, nobody has put more flesh in the game in understanding and analyzing Star Wars The Force Awakens than our co-host. So, with that being said,
let's begin. Okay. Before we get to Andrew Main's extremely thoughtful, complicated journey with this movie, because I've heard of, I honestly don't know where you are, Andrew, at this point, because I've heard you at different phases of denial, acceptance, bargaining, all of that stuff. but Justin.
Yeah,
I'm gonna assume that your opinion was largely positive.
I mean, it's very much a movie of its era. It feels, the script feels like a Marvel script. It feels like at its most punchy. It feels like a Pixar script with, you know. You're never more than a few seconds away from either an emotional beat, an action beat, or a comedy beat. And the comedy beats very often kind of pop in when you don't expect them and kind of keep you off balance. It's exceptionally fun. And if it weren't for the fact that it comes in, you know, with so much baggage, and I personally, emotionally, just have this reservation to be like, just don't go and yell and say it's great, because the last time you went and yelled that something was great, it was terrible in the Star Wars universe. So like, I have personal trepidation about it. But man, I saw it twice and it was really fun. And there was really not a whole lot of times where I was just like, yeah, there are times where the movie drags more than others. But even then it's like, yeah, you know what? I can see to the end of this. We're going to go and do something else.
I found myself entering a weird, I don't know, contest in my mind that I hadn't bothered to do before. You know, we have spent a lifetime, a literal lifetime, rating Star Wars movies in order of, you know, best versus least awesome and so on. But for the first time with this movie, I found myself asking, you know, hey, have I ever paused to rate the Star Wars movies based on the strength of the first act? And in that regard, and that was largely because this first act is freaking amazing. It's second only to Empire Strikes Back. And Empire Strikes Back is, number one, only because it's an entire movie in the first act. I loved the introduction of this. I loved everything about it. I loved the characters, loved the story. I thought it was just the right amount of action. To be honest, I thought everything slowed down once we started seeing elements of the previous trilogy, you know, wedged in there. I really, really dug everything new about the Star Wars universe in this one.
Orchestral swell. Andrew Main enters, was surrounded by smoke.
All right. I'm very aware of my own failings as somebody when I watch something and I observe something. And when going into this before, we were making our predictions, somebody, I don't remember who it was, said that they would have criticisms and I would explain away those criticisms. And it was, we had,
I mean, that was my prediction, is that I would be the more cynical one who would have problems, you know, niggling though they be, and that it would be you who would, you know, be nothing but sunshine and rainbows. And it turns out that's not the case. I'm all sunshine and rainbows.
I said I would be positive. You would be positive, Brian, because you saw it with Penny. And there's not a movie that you see with Penny that you don't come back
Jumping
up and down and yelling about. And that Andrew would have issues.
So, and I know, like, I believe that everybody's experience is their own. I'm not one of, you're wrong to like this. I will jokingly say that about certain things, but I don't really feel that way because I know that everybody watches things with their own experience. You know, as magicians and people familiar with magic, we watch magic differently than other people do. And, you know, as a magician watching a magic show, it's hard for you not to notice certain things if you're trained, because it is, you can't really turn out that brain. You just turn off that part. You just hope that the other things are very, very bigger and attract your attention to it, so you don't care about that stuff. As a writer and every day, just sweating over and obsessing over structure versus plot versus character, and always having a critic inside my head going, well, why did you have her do this in this chapter? Why did she go here? Is that, we know that it's to serve the story, but did you make an easy choice there instead of trying to find a better solution? And I'm always nervous about that in my own writing, going, oh man, probably to a fault that I think that I probably have extremely good plot structure. I may not have as good emotional structure in some of my works and other things. And so going into this, I was aware of the idea that with J.J. Abrams, J.J. Abrams is brilliant at characters, he's brilliant at structure, and he will take whatever plot shortcuts he needs to get there to build those things. And that's why his movies resonate, because he says, I know I need to have you here with the characters in the second act. And in the beginning of the third act, I need to have you here. He cares more about that than the coherence of the plot, which is part of the reason, like, it's like we all look at Star Trek and we go, hey, you know, that's a fun movie. You go, like, yeah, it had plot holes, but we didn't care. And that was my attitude, is like, is there are things that happen in Star Trek that I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, yeah, but I was having so much fun, it didn't bother me. So all this is in the back of my mind when I go in here, and I just want a great movie. I want a great, big, fun movie. And so I watch it and I'm like, I love this cast. This cast is amazing. And the cast is on camera. Absolutely amazing. I love the look of it. The visuals of it are amazing, are great. I love so much of just everything that was done. But then I'm walking out of it going, man, but there were things that I perceive as these JJ shortcuts, and there were verbatim things that I felt, you know, came out of Star Trek, which is a second act. You know, you introduce the legacy character in the second act shortly after encountering a monster or a threat that's eaten by another monster, you know. And the legacy character then sees a catastrophic event literally up in the sky that then makes them decide to make the sacrifice that could take their life, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So there were these other things. So I'm like, well, this is really echoing. I'm not trying to be like, you know, I don't want to be like that.
Oh no. The main character of Metamorphosis, the short story where a man turns into a bug, had less angst than Andrew over the past 48 hours.
So I walk out of the theater and I started thinking about it. And I had a ticket for 2:30, you know, 2:30 a.m. screening, like in a really great premium seat. and things are dwelling with me, and I'm frustrated by stuff because I can't understand. Like, you know, I want my characters to do consistent things, and I want them to act consistently with that. And I could go through the list of stuff that I have at some point if you guys want. But I go see the second showing, and I'm kind of half tired. I leave halfway through because I'm a little bit like, all right, this is bothering me even more, and I'm tired, and I'm also tired, so I go home.
Yeah, because it's creeping up on 4 in the freaking morning at this point. Yeah.
So I go home. Next day I get up. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to, for my own purposes, I'm going to lay out all my criticisms, all the things that I thought were plot choices made for the expediency of story and really how to try to build structure and all my issues. So I wrote basically like a 4,000-word thing going into and again, it's not a binary. Was it good or bad?
By the way, for those of you out there who aren't on, there's something better than the Andrew Main email list. It's being in Andrew Main's phone, at which point, you know, Andrew Main will call and give you a live one-man performance of each shows. So if you ever get the chance to see the one-man show, Andrew Main's thoughts and feelings about Star Wars Episode 7, I highly recommend it.
And I saw it in many formats. I got the 4,000-word emails. I got the phone calls. Eventually, your friend and mine, Katie Dirks, just throws a group chat together with a bunch of us and her fiance. And so I get it in that version. Like there are, just to put pause on Andrew's journey here, this is what I found to be most exciting about this weekend is that even at, you know, this stage where Andrew, very critical of the movie. In fact, I feel like, I just want to, like, there's just these ominous text messages that I get. Just, I'm getting angrier. I just get the Rick and Morty macro of, this is just shoddy workmanship. Like, this is just, but even at that point, I was so excited that we just got to talk about the nuances of a Star Wars movie.
Oh my gosh.
Even if it was to be critical of it, the nuances of it that weren't just like, hey, this was boring. Yes or no? Check one.
And to be clear, like at no point am I like, oh, this is prequels. Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
No. Never.
I was like, I'm going to compare this to, like, if you ask me to name some of the greatest films of all time, like I will say Empire Strikes Back is up there. And I would say for world building, nothing beats Star Wars. Lord of the Rings is pretty close, you know, Fellowship. And so I think and so I hold these movies because I think it's not just those movies are fun. I think that those movies often get overlooked by cinema purists because if you take away all the eye candy. No, everybody does that wrong. And what other people think is easy is really hard. And so I walked out of this and Justin said this and I agreed. I said, yeah, he got the hard things right. He got the hard things right. And that's where the other stuff, which frustrated me. So I sit down and I write this long thing that, like, here are all my problems with this movie, right? And then I'm like, and I say to myself, and I noticed that, like, I watched the Rotten Tomatoes go from 94 to 95. And I look at everybody I talk to is in love with this movie. Everybody I talk to love this. And I've talked about this before. I'm a guy that I will rewatch something until I like it. I don't want to be that, if it's possible. I don't want to be that guy.
So, like, when you have a problem with the thing, it's like you and everyone else loves it. You just assume it's not that everyone else is dumb. It's that you're broken in some strange way.
Yes, then I'm a shell of man. I look inward. I look inward to say, what did I miss? What did I miss about this or whatever? And I know part of the problem is not that I missed. It's just that I saw with different eyes than people who don't read as many books on structure and stuff like this and all that. You know, and aren't and don't break down a movie like I do, like watching other movies, then say, oh yeah, no, this is the same format we saw here or whatever. So anyhow,
real quick, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, I remember you had a very different view on the first time you saw it compared to the second time that you saw it.
And that's an example. I will love a movie more the second time because I talked about this before. Lee Dennis said, you walk into there with a VHS tape in your head that you have to erase over, okay? And for the first viewing. And then once you go into the next viewing, you have to then, you know, I had so many questions about why the hell did they do this? This doesn't make sense from what I understand the universe being presented to me in that. It just seemed like I knew the answer was, well, it's an act two shortcut, you know, yeah. Which, you know, how do you get, and this was a quiz that I asked all my friends, right? And I asked everybody this, and only one out of like five or six people knew this. I said, why did they go to Maz's castle? Why did they go there? Why did they stop there? Even though they had the location of the, you know, location of the Alliance, why did this happen? And
by the way, Maz's castle is, for people like me who saw it and didn't even realize they were seeing it, is the cantina-esque.
The space coffee bar with Pumpkin Yoda.
Right.
Only one person knew. Everybody else, they had no idea. And I said, well, you know, if I asked you why did the Millennium Falcon have to stop at Cloud City in Bespin?
Hold on. I don't think I know either.
They stop at Cloud City in Bespin because they are way out in the middle of nowhere and just need a place to go, right?
Didn't they need to repair the Falcon? They were there.
Hyperdrive broke. Remember, hyperdrive broke.
Yeah.
And so they found Bespin was nearby.
Right.
Yes. And that was consistent with the Falcon that was always breaking down and all that. And so I had issues like this, like, wait, they knew, and like there's this new, you know, Star Killer. All these things are in my head. I'm like, I know why they did it I know why the screenwriters did it. I want to know why this is true in the universe. You know, I want to know why it's true. So I had a lot of these things. And so I wrote this thing, like, here's why did this happen? Why do they do this other than the expediency of the story? And I'm like, you know, if somebody can explain this to me, then great. I will be able to enjoy the storytelling thing more from this point of view. But then I went and looked at Reddit, and again, I'm a movie apologist. I'm the guy that, like Brian pointed out before, I'm the guy that'll explain to you, no, they did it because of this. This is why this made sense and all that. I'm often the guy that explains to other people why things happen in movies, because as a writer, I'm always trying to invent explanations. So I get done with my list and I'm like, all right, let me go find Reddit, because I want to love this movie like everybody else. I want to be dancing with the Ewoks up on the little forest village. I want to be there. I want to be there with everybody else. I don't want to be the guy standing outside the theater going, yeah, guys, you're just fall for a lie. And I don't mean questions like where things are going. I'm like, this seemed inconsistent for what they did, blah, blah, blah.
So what did you find when you went to Reddit?
I found a lot of stupidity. I found that people were like going – and I had this conversation with a friend of mine, you know, how did she beat Kylo Ren? And I'm like, all right, J.J. Abrams almost beat you over the head explaining how that happened. Remember every time Han Solo picked up Chewie's crossbow and it blew up, like stormtroopers' armor would shatter when they hit a wall and people would fly back violently. Everybody died. And so he got hit by that crossbow bolt. And so he should be dead. He's probably got who knows how much internal – he's the most violent, you know, powerful hand weapon we've ever seen in these movies, got used on Kylo Ren. And that was – and somebody says that thing was way too overemphasized. Not enough, because people didn't understand that's why he was so weak.
And also I think it was fairly clear from the character's perspective that Kylo Ren is just a surly teenager, right? He's not a Sith Lord. He's not a fallen Jedi master. He's an apprentice, a middling guy.
We saw him do more powerful Force stuff than we ever saw Vader did.
We saw flashier displays, but I think that very clearly they wrote and depicted him.
I think he should have been able to murder. If he wanted to just straight out murder Finn and Rey, he would have been able to. The problem was, I mean, as he gets shot in the gut by Chewie's bowcaster, which we see to be powerful. And then as he begins to fight, we see that it continues to bother him because he keeps hammering at his chest, and then we pan down to the snow to see, you know, that he's dropping blood.
He's bleeding, and he's internally, who knows how. And so I'm okay with that. I'm okay. And somebody says, how did Han never fire Chewie's bowcast for? Maybe he never did. Maybe Chewie made improvements. That doesn't bother me. Things like that, those are nitpicks that are easily explainable if you think about it. I think of more, you know, so like I had bigger issues of stuff about like, wait, you know, they're worried about the Starkiller base now. Anyhow, I had all these, and I went to Reddit in search of explanations to put me at ease, and they weren't there. And I'm like, all right, I've got a challenge for you, Mr. Maine. take every single one of your points and come up with an explanation for it. Because I thought about this, and one of the things I realized was that using Blade Runner's analogy, there are people who love the movie Blade Runner. The people who really fell in love with Blade Runner tend to fall in love when they saw the original version with the narration. But they will tell you, oh, no, watch the version without narration. It's better. If you've never seen Blade Runner, it's not. You're confused. You don't know what's happening. You take for granted all the stuff that you know about what's going on from the narration. And the second time you see it, you don't need that stuff, right? With Star Wars is I first saw this when I was 4 years old, right? I didn't know everything that's going on, but I'm following the action and I'm right with it. I'm like, I get the big points and they're awesome and this is going to change my life. Then I got the baseball cards, you know, with the little backstory on that. Then I got the action figures, this. And then I had all of my friends explaining to me this collective knowledge. So when I watch Star Wars, like, oh, yeah, we know who the Sand People are. We know what the Jawas are. We understand why this is a big deal and what's not because of all this outside stuff that's, you know, come around for that. We jump into Force Awakens 30 years later. And the universe is in a new place. The galaxy is in a new place. We don't quite know what the First Order is. We don't know what the Republic is versus the Alliance. We don't know any of these things. And I realized for myself, I said, you know what? 95% of people don't care. They're really into this. I'm the guy that's stuck on these things that I need to know. Maybe I should go find those answers to those questions. And maybe I'll look at the movie differently.
Well, and so were you able to?
Yes, Brian.
What answers did you come back with?
Well, Brian, that leads us to the second 4,000-word email that we got from Andrew May. Because just to be clear, here's what happens. We get on Friday a 4,000-word email going point by point of his issues with the movie. We then get on Saturday another 4,000-word email where he
I was just going to say, I've never been happier than I'm so lousy at email. Like, I'm opening up my email trying to find those emails right now.
It is as if he was writing a hit piece on the first column writer. He goes and destroys and demolishes his own nitpicks and arguments.
So, folks, here's where we're getting to the next part of the story. Cut to the chase. I love this film. I love this film, and I found answers for everything, even things that if I ask you, what about this? And somebody goes, oh, it's sad that Andrew can't enjoy this movie. I say it's sad that you can't see things through my eyes because I appreciate a lot of things other people don't. I appreciate things that often that people just don't pay attention to. I had a wonderful journey with this film. I really, really liked it the first time I saw it, despite the flaws, and I got frustrated with things that I thought that brought it down. And then I said, all right, I'm going to critique my critique. I'm going to find the answers to this because I don't think we should just say every time, hey, it's just fun. If I sat next to you during Phantom Menace and said, hey, it's just a movie, it's Star Wars, you should hit me, you know?
Well, I mean, because that objectively also wasn't fun. Well, but it does. I think a lot of the stuff that was.
Oh, but how cool is it to watch Yoda fight? The Duel of the Fates.
A lot of the stuff that was left out, and this is something that Andrew and I were talking about last night. I feel like there is a very deliberate decision by the creators, and whether or not it was affected directly by the prequels or just what they loved so much about the original trilogy, is very focused on these characters and not the wider world, to the point where even the second time I saw it, I'm like, all right, I know that this planet, the Starkiller base is blowing up, is affected or is you know a important right to the Republic, but I have no idea who the people are that are rushing to the balcony. I don't know how big the planet is. I don't know how important it is. I know there are answers to all this, but it's like they wanted to keep it right there. They wanted it like, you know, if Rey doesn't know it, then we don't know it.
So I am now the guy that will defend this movie and the nitpicks. So understand, people, my journey is complete, okay? I am now where Brian said I would be, okay? I am now, as Brian foretold, that I am the guy that will explain away any criticism of this because I have done so much damn research onto this, into the Star Wars wiki base and all this. I have answers for all my questions, and I've invented a convenient one for, like, how did they see this galactic explosion across the galaxy, even though in the Star Wars universe it's – that sounds straight. I have a reason. I have a reason. I have reasons for all this stuff now. So people
by
understand.
The way, having and watch it again, I think he only sees the beam. I don't know if he sees the explosion, which actually fits into your theory for which I have read up on.
No, they see the explosion.
They see the explosion from.
They see planets blowing up. I believe yes.
Okay, I thought.
But it's fine. It's fine. I have an explanation for that. Okay, so I'm okay with this. Again, I realize this is a movie everybody loves, and all I needed to do was have answers that Andrew needed for Andrew to be satisfied. And so I went and I saw it a third time last night, and absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. And I'm looking forward to go see it again. Okay. So, do we want me to go through quickly?
Let's just highlights. You get one sentence per issue.
I mean, I don't need to bring up my issues. I'm more concerned about issues other people may have.
Our issues are.
You will. I'm sure if anybody has anything after this, then let's go ahead and bring it. I feel like you are the platter.
Let's address the big ones. Why do they build a third Death Star?
I assumed that it was a precursor artifact that they discovered and that they just tuned up and started up again. I look at the First Order like, I don't know, a bunch of jokers who are worshiping the empire that was. And so they adopt all of the trappings of the empire and they lucked into this planet canon thing. That's what I just assumed. Not based on anything said in the movie. That's just what the vibe I got.
I believe that they have built this new hyper-powered, carved-out planet canon because they – and part of it is that I know from reading Andrew's thing, but I loved – Andrew, are here. Just give the analogy of the development of technology for the First Order, because I feel like what you hit on in that second email – was a comparison of the First Order and the time period to our modern history that I found just totally like made me love the movie a million times more.
If you look at the First Order as Germany before World War II, right? After the ashes of World War I, Germany's economy was in shambles. They had to retreat. They were given an embarrassing, you know, treaty that just carved up, you know, parts of their territory, whatever. They were beaten and they were frustrated and they were very, very vindictive. And so they made an effort to increase the technological level that they were working at, their tactics, all this. You had all these battle-hardened World War I generals and stuff, and that would then said, how do we not let this happen again? And when Germany did this rapid militarization, where they went from the poorest economy in Europe after World War I to the most powerful superpower in Europe, you know, rivaling only the United States really in strength. In a period less than 30 years, which is, you know, the time the First Awakens take or First Order takes, you realize that, yeah, this fits very much within the rise of Germany post-World War I to World War II. If you look at what happened, one of the things – so here's what I said there. Okay. I write, why does the Empire keep building Death Stars only to have them destroyed? And I is it because it works so well as a plot point, 2 out of 3 of the original movies? No. First, this is the first time the First Order has made a weapon like this, and they're totally new guys, sort of. It's not that the Empire, the First Order, is obsessed with them. It's that the Sith or whoever the dark power running these operations are obsessed with building these ultimate weapons. In World War II, the Germans put enormous effort into building V-2 rockets. This gave them the ability to strike at England safely from within their own territory. When Allies bombed the V-2 factory, the Germans – okay, Allies burned was Permanente or whatever. They built – they bombed this V-2 factory that was producing – hundreds and hundreds of V-2 rockets. The Germans were trying to develop ICBM technology in World War II 20 years before we actually ended up having it, because they realized that once you could send a missile anywhere in the world, you could control the world. That was what they tried to do. This was a real thing. We finally went in and bombed the hell out of the German V-2 factory where they were building these things, and you're like, did they give up? No. They actually went and they carved out an entire mountain where they could build hundreds of V-2 rockets at the time. When the Allies finally made it into German territory and they go inside of this mountain, there is an incredible industrial city. This was a real thing that was there, building rockets that could go into space. Like, they actually, V-2 is like the first ones to go into space. That was a real thing that happened in a very short amount of time. So in the Star Wars universe, will I accept the idea that they're capable of taking an entire planet in this place called the Unknown Regions and turning this into this base? And remember, in the Star Wars universe, there are millions of habited worlds out there, okay? And would Snoke, Supreme Leader Snoke, turn the entire economy of all the planets and everything else they control towards building this weapon? Sure. The Germans did it, okay? And it to their disadvantage. 25,000 people died building these things. More people died building the V-2 rockets than were actually killed by them. This was a real thing that happened. And another thing to think about, too, is that every great leader, like a pharaoh or whatever, you know, in Egyptian times and et cetera, would build big temples to themselves. In the case of the Star Wars universe, this seems to be that these guys want to build these big, huge death rays, these death planets or whatever to attack, to do that. And so it's not just they want a weapon, they want a monument to their power because they're always controlled by one guy using the dark forces to perilously, you know, to try to control and influence everybody else. And once he has this weapon, he doesn't need troops. He doesn't need that. That was the whole idea of the Clone War, was the idea of the Emperor trying to get rid of the human element. So that's why they keep building these weapons. Is it a good idea? Maybe not. But that's really happened in, you know, the Germans were building these big, huge guns on the size of mountains to try to attack. They were building mega weapons all the time at great expense that may have cost them the war. But once they figured they had that power, once it worked for them, they would do it.
And by the way, that planet is the seat of power for the Republic.
Yes. So what we saw blown up, those planets were they said we're blowing up the Senate. We're actually going to destroy the Senate. So what happens in Force Awakens is the First Order just annihilated this. So here's the state of events right now, and this is from the official Star Wars version. You have the Republic, the Restored Republic, right? They had a treaty with the First Order, and the First Order was confined to its space, and they were not allowed to build certain weapons. The Star Destroyers they have, they weren't supposed to build, much like the treaty with Germany pre-World War II. But they violated, and they started militarizing, okay? Leia is like, hey, guys, they're a threat. And so she's organizing the resistance. And that's why it's not the rebellion, it's the resistance, because they're the ones on the front lines trying to push back the influence of the First Order that the Republic doesn't quite see. Some people in the Republic were giving her funding, were letting her do this. She was not in charge of the Republic. Starkiller Base really wasn't her responsibility. That was the Republic's responsibility, you know. So once the First Order destroys the center of the Republic, as we saw happen in the movie, this means that going into the next movie is that the Republic is wide open for the First Order to step in.
And also that the First Order got more out of their planet space laser cannon than the Empire ever did, right?
Yep.
Like, Empire never got a win. Granted, they were in power, right? But they never just totally took out something. Like, you could say that it is worth it for them, even with the cost of it, with that planet exploding, right, and the loss of life, it was worth it to have completely destabilized the Republic.
Most important blow they could have made, they made. And you pointed out, like, we didn't know those people, whatever. But that was a step beyond when we watched Star Wars. We've only met one person from Alderaan, and that's Princess Leia. You know, we know, hey, it's a peaceful planet. We have no weapons. We're like, hey, listen, I don't know if that's quite true, Princess Leia. I think you're lying. But anyhow, they blow it up, and that was a loss. But I was okay with that in Star Wars. And that was a criticism of Star Wars, was the fact that we didn't get to know more about it. So.
All right. So that's why they build a Death Star. That's
yes.
Bigger than the Death Star.
Okay.
Side note, how awesome does Admiral Akbar look? Calamari don't crack.
Yeah, they
that,
well.
That was not that was not meant to be Admiral Akbar, was it?
That was
I figured,
Akbar.
In fact, I'll be disappointed if it is. I just assumed it was another calamari. Damn.
Another calamari. Well, I mean, but he was high up in the. He would be the first one to join her side.
There's no need to wedge people into the same roles. You don't need.
It's not.
Followers.
It's that when she's trying to build up this resistance. Who does she go to?
What is the lifespan on a calamari?
She goes to the first who helped her out before. And
I think the movie was better because it was Jakku, not Tatooine. I think the movie would be better if it was, you know, Bobo, not Akbar.
I see that as shit.
Admiral Bobo.
But why are you okay with it being Princess Leia? General Leia.
I tolerate it. I don't love it.
But
all things being equal, all things being equal, I would prefer, outside of Luke Skywalker, who is a major plot point, everything else from the old trilogy felt wedged in to me. But I think it would have been better without
it. But I would say it was extremely logical that – I would say that she's the one that saw this before, and then she's like, hey, this is happening again. And they'll be like, nah, you're crazy. And that's the position she's in. Like, she's just trying to relive her old days, you know? Here she's warning us about this threat, and, you know, we know. Not that we live in a country where a head of state told us that ISIS wasn't a threat that, you know, we see a week later.
In general, every time you do that, it's a trade-off. You do get the pop with the audience of like, oh, that's that thing I know. But every time you do that, I see the
Millennium Falcon showing up as more of that intentional pop than Admiral Akbar.
But the Millennium Falcon, it could be said, is an important plot point. Whereas Akbar, it was what did having him be Admiral Akbar add to the story? Exactly,
I think it added to the credibility that she's relying on the people that helped her defeat the Empire before to go after the First Order. Who would be the first people I would go after? Would be the last team. I'd go get the original.
So you're saying in an alternate reality, the same movie, but it's, you know, like, I don't know, wasn't really credible that she's putting together a coalition of all her best people. I didn't see Akbar there. I mean, is that what we're looking at?
He's there for 5 seconds, and you didn't notice him until I made a joke about, you know, about the fact that he looked good for his age.
The bringing back a character is a powerful card that should be played when you need a punch, and they didn't need a punch there. They didn't need it to be
we're going to have to disagree, because I thought it was extremely logical that the only people she's able to rally to her side were the people that were there the last time. That the generals, she's going to get the old generals that helped her before.
I mean, listen, Mon Calamari only have an average lifespan of 80 years. Like, he looks great. Can we get back to what was important here and how good Admiral Akbar looks for his age?
He looks the best I've ever seen him.
He looks
plus
amazing.
Also, the fact that he was reprised by the actual Admiral Akbar was just amazing. Looks great.
All right. Did we really just get, like, did Poop just get real about Admiral Akbar?
No. I'm sorry. I'm a wee bit distracted because, in addition to being in charge of a puppy, a 3-year-old definitely just walked in and started grabbing the mic and just muted me because there's buttons to be pressed.
Listen, as Admiral Bobo says, this is difficult.
So, long story short, folks, I found answers to all of my questions in the Book of Mormon. I found answers in the Jedi Holocron, and I was able to be at peace in the same way. I was able to make the same allowances I did for Star Wars and Jedi and all that, and really appreciate the greatness that is this movie. And I love this movie.
What was the other biggest thing that you, I mean, I know, you know, just getting to the Maz's castle was a big thing. Seeing the explosion was a big thing. Was there anything else that you realized,
in the movie they explained why they go to Maz's castle, but I had trouble understanding that because I was under the impression of like, wait, they've got a guy that knows about Starkiller Base.
Yeah.
They know where the resistance is. Why don't they go straight there? It seemed dumb to me. But then when I watched it again and I realized, and then I did all the research, I realized, one, they don't know the urgency of Starkiller Base. They always assume that they're building something. They don't know that this thing's ready to be active and all that. That was even a revelation in you know, that they're like with the First Order is like, oh no, this thing's ready to go. They're like, oh, all right, let's go use this thing. So that was something that you wouldn't expect them to know. And the thing that helped me understand it too is at the very beginning is I'm like, well, they didn't announce Starkiller Base in the opening crawl because then they didn't want people thinking that it was a New Hope. But then I thought, you know what? For Leia, she's desperately trying to find Luke like she tried to find Obi-Wan, because when your leader of the First Order is a guy who's a, you know, we'll assume that he's Sith, you know, we assume is a guy using Sith, using, you know, dark powers, he's able, that is a technological advantage. You're able to route out spies, you're able to use this to help hide what you're up to. And that's why she wanted Luke, was because they needed the good side of the Force to help them. One of the reasons that was illustrated is because they had no idea Starkiller Base was happening. This is the reason she's trying to find her brother, is because it's not because of a family dispute. It's because they need good Jedi powers on their side, which they don't have, which is why things got to hell.
Balloon Knot asked something that kind of rubbed me the wrong way when I did see it at the very end of the movie. They come back, you know, although Han Solo is dead at the hands of his son, we have saved the day. Starkiller Base is no more. And as they walk in, the previously on low power mode R2-D2 comes sputtering to life, finding the, providing the context for the map that they already had a piece of. So they had the full map in the Resistance's hands since the second that BB-8 got there. It seemed as a bit droid ex machina, but what was your thought there?
Why did R2 not reveal the rest of the map until, you know, why did he wait until after, you know, they returned from the successful mission instead of prior to that, you know, mission? And you know, the short answer is, well, it worked better in the screenplay. And the in-universe explanation could certainly be that one of the things that had not happened, the missing component to this was that we overlook is R2 has been present all along. R2, you know, is the one that, like, probably didn't have his memory banks wiped as much as C-3PO or whatever. R2 has a connection to Luke Skywalker. R2, yeah. You saw, and that was again, JJ went out of his way to show us Poe and BB-8. Poe and BB-8. You know, yeah. Poe and BB-8 have this really good connection. BB-8, super loyal to Poe, to shocking Finn and all this, and that's showing there is a connection between these people there. So there was a connection between R2 and Luke Skywalker, right? So much so, this droid's like, he's gone, I'm shutting down. And R2 was an astromech, he would know plans, he would know things and all that, and so the location, part of the location of where the old Jedi Temple, which is where Luke was, yeah, I get that R2 would have that bigger section of the map that the Empire had and all that. Why did R2 wait until – what happened? What changed after the battle? What was the most – what was now different that R2 could be aware of?
That Rey was back and Rey was strong with the Force.
And what happened when Rey was near Luke's lightsaber?
She felt the call to it and she had flashbacks, or she picked up the memories, right, that have been embedded on this device.
So now that Rey is safely, Rey is there, that there is this new quote, a New Hope part two, a new Hope is there, yeah, that had a connection to one thing that belonged to Luke Skywalker. She could have a connection to another thing that belonged to Luke Skywalker, and that's why R2 now wakes up.
Well, and then
it's an explanation. Mileage may vary.
I just took it as R2 was just waiting until the other piece of the puzzle showed up, like low power mode until I get the whole map, and then
yeah. But they BB-8 had the map before they went on the mission. That was BB-8 went up to R2 when he came back, and he had the map in him. That was what bothered people.
Well, I don't know. I mean, wait. It takes 6 hours for him to get out of low power mode. I've had computers that take that long. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you can have an explanation. You know, that's fine. That's fine for you. For yeah. me, it was the idea that Rey, because Rey had a connection to lightsaber, that Rey might have a connection to R2. And I really don't want her to be Rey Skywalker. I really want to believe that in the Star Wars universe, you could not be a Skywalker and still be really cool.
I agree. That would certainly make it feel like a bigger universe. And in general, I'm a fan of bigger universes. Yeah, I got a 3-year-old who wants to try talking into the mic. No, sweetie, you got to go downstairs here. I know we have to wrap up after things, and which we did before weird things. So I'm going to take this girl downstairs and try to set her up with Ninja Turtles.
Sweet.
Got you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I love Star Wars Force Awakens. I think it's a worthy sequel to the others. I think to the Holy Trilogy. My journey is complete. Please go see this movie. If you have any questions or whatever, and you want us to deal with them on After Things, I will answer. I will be the explainer. I will tell you why you're wrong to have skepticism. I have seen the light.
Certainly so. Let me just, in summation of my feelings, I really, really, really feel that the pieces that have been left on the board in the hands of Rian Johnson,
oh my God,
might
yeah.
be the most exciting thing that I've wrapped my head around in movies since forever. And just a huge shout out to Adam Driver, man. Adam Driver, to me, it just steals this movie. And it is his charisma that kind of, I think, everything just sort of wraps around, as much as this is Rey and Finn's you know, story that they are the protagonist. But a Star Wars is as good as its villain, and the idea that we get, you know, this immature, mega powerful, driven and haunted by legacy, you know, kind of character. I just love.
Yeah, I thought all the new choices were so wonderful. And that's why I went through this angst, was I'm like, the things, the why. But I was wrong, guys. I was wrong.
Well, until next time, ladies and gentlemen, it's been after. Circle wipe.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.